mouth.
Information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border
it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
A manufactured crash of civilizations unfolds and the whole of humanity lunges at each other's throats. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 184 from Media Monarchy. It's August 27th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups, crazed mobs, distractions, and missing the truth, cannabis car, Corexit, and Kubrick, the corporation, violations in investigating illusion, scan vans, welfare dorms, and pre-crime police state, Bancor, plunder, and geopolitical thunder. All that, so much more, August 27th, 2010, episode 184 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Staff and faith and milk and I'm drinking filth.
That's brand new music from the one and only Smashing Pumpkins. That song is available for free on their site, smashingpumpkins.com, and it's called Freak. And I want to thank my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com for turning me onto that song in his latest episode about truth music. But you are here, and it's now, my friends, and welcome to the 184th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 27th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. And we are broadcasting live, as always, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And, of course, a huge thanks to our great affiliates who help syndicate and rebroadcast MediaMonarchy.com, such as the fine folks at ZeroPointRadio.com, broadcasting live as we speak worldwide on ZeroPointRadio.com, as well as 92.3 FM and 1670 AM in Casper, Wyoming, the worldwide home of free speech, RevereRadio.net, broadcasting live 1 p.m. on the East Coast. And again, thanks to FrOlympia.org, Free Radio Olympia, 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington. I did post up an interview I did with those guys a couple of months ago. It's there for you. Again, thanks to them for rebroadcasting the show Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. Pacific time on FrOlympia.org. BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California. OneSkyRadio.com, 90.7 FM in Kisilov, Alaska. 89.9 FM in La Mesa, Texas, thanks to Patriot Radio. Radio23.org is where you can get the high-quality downloads of all the episodes from Media Monarchy, suitable for rebroadcast on your own alternative media outlet, wherever it may be, how big or small it may be. We appreciate it. You can get in touch with me, Facebook.com/Media Monarchy, as well as MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Ustream.com/Media Monarchy, where we are streaming and recording live video as we speak right now, episode 184. Blip.tv, CafePress.com/Media Monarchy. You can get a t-shirt. You can get in touch, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org. Just ways to build out the redundancy and help spread information and open source intelligence. We ask you, if you find this information valuable, if you enjoy MediaMonarchy.com, there is the donate button. We appreciate it. It helps keep us going. It pays for the domains. It pays for my studio fees and all those things that help keep all of this running. So I'd like to thank my man David in Hollywood, the latest donator to Media Monarchy, and your exclusive 2020 Hindsight Censorship on the Frontline DVD is coming out to you. And again, $10 gets you that exclusive DVD from Richard Grove and PeaceRevolution.org and TragedyAndHope.com. We also want to remind you that my man Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org is doing his live presentation tonight at the Kenton Masonic Lodge in Portland, Oregon, Plan 10. And you can hear that show live. You can purchase your digital ticket on ZeroPointRadio.com. I will be there, and it ties in with all that we're seeing with the predictive programming going on in inner space and outer space. And we covered a lot of that on the previous episode, 183B. A lot of those things coming from CyberspaceWar.com. And before we get into our first bit of news, we, of course, always like to glance at what the breaking news is on this Friday morning, August 27th, 2010. This will be our last episode for August, as time seemingly speeds up. Bernanke says the economy remains vulnerable, which, of course, it already was, but now that he said it, it will become even more so. Downward revision of gross domestic product growth, a strong signal of stalled recovery. And the third story is about sports. Yes, that's the most important thing. Torn ligaments in the bread and circus sports world. So we'll leave that open in case anything breaks. We'll try and fix it for you here on episode 184 from MediaMonarchy.com. Amazingly enough, we're only going to go over four posts in this episode, but they are all four massive and tie in so many things. And that is what made our previous episode pretty jam-packed with all the latest from Food World Order and Cyberspace War, as well as related alternative news from the fantastic and aforementioned Clyde Lewis, James Corbett, Richard Grove, all the folks that I'm lucky enough to be associated with in this, what is really an information war, and it is a war on consciousness. We're going to start off with the latest news purge, the 826 news purge posted up yesterday, August 26th, asking the musical question, do you know the score, as we just heard in our opening track, Freak, from Smashing Pumpkins. We're going to start with a piece from Steve Watson that really breaks down and really fleshes out the story that we covered last week, and that is the Ground Zero hysteria. Islamanoia. Call it what you will. Ground Zero mosque imam is globalist CFR stooge. The imam of the now famous Ground Zero Mosque is a member of the ultra-elitist Council on Foreign Relations and receives financial backing from powerful globalist sources including the Rockefellers, the Carnegie Corporation, and the Ford Foundation. Of course, all folks who supported Hitler. This information provides a compelling backdrop to the theory that the move to establish the mosque is a deliberate attempt to further stoke religious tensions and divert attention away from the real enemy of free humanity, the corporate globalist elite who continue to profit from global war and division. This proposed mosque, to be known as the Cordoba House, is the project of the Cordoba Initiative, an organization founded by Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, R-A-U-F. Who, in addition to being a member of the World Economic Forum's Council of 100, is also an active member of the Council on Foreign Relations Religious Advisory Committee. The Cordoba Initiative's website states, Christian support for the Cordoba House in the form of Christian publication Sojourners, which is owned by evangelical Christian writer and political activist Jim Wallace, also coincidentally a sitting member of the Council on Foreign Relations Religious Advisory Committee. The CFR, as regular readers and listeners should know, is populated exclusively by major players with the biggest corporations, banks, and defense contractors. We would also add in media and all those other entertainment industrial complex players as well, all of whom are making vast profits and securing more power from continued global conflict. The CFR also exerts far-reaching influence over the U.S. government. Tony Cartolucci over at Land Destroyer blog breaks down the fact that every single leading player in both the neocon-infested Bush administration on the fake right and the change gang under Barry Satoro and the fake left is a CFR luminary. Land Destroyer also provides further stunning research relating to Cordoba House and its CFR imam, which breaks down as follows. Faisal Abdul Rauf also heads up the American Society for Muslim Advancement, which enjoys a partnership with the Cordoba Initiative and provided $100 million to secure the site close to Ground Zero for the mosque to be built. That $100 million came directly from the back pockets of American Society for Muslim Advance financial backers. According to ASMA's website, they include the Carnegie Corporation of New York, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Brothers, Rockefeller Philanthropy, and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, essentially the tip of the pyramid of the international globalist elite. This story is a perfect microcosm of this New World Order agenda. Again, New World Order is their term. The mainstream media continues to push the mosque story hour after hour, day after day, from the perspective of both the left and the right, manufacturing a controversy that plays on the now indentured fear of Islam that's been cooked up over the last 9 years via endless phony Muslim terror plots and concocted al-Qaeda threats. Real Muslims are witnesses to a vicious backlash, stirred up and served from this corporate-controlled media cauldron, creating the impression they're under attack by non-Muslims and forcing them to have to defend their religion, and then the whole thing snowballs onwards. These connections to 9/11 are clear and also serve to endorse and enforce the mythical notion that 19 radical Muslims controlled by some guy in a cave in Afghanistan were able to direct military precision attacks on America with devastating consequences. Meanwhile, behind all of this are the global elite, rubbing their hands in glee as a manufactured clash of civilizations unfolds and the whole of humanity lunges at each other's throats. That should break it down quite well for you, my friends. This Ground Zero mosque imam, Abdul Rauf, is a globalist Council on Foreign Relations stooge. Then, by way of raw story, and thanks to John Stewart, which again, that's where our Orwellian world is. The best news comes from a comedy show somehow. Not always. I'm just shortening. They busted out the fact that Fox News co-owner also funded the mosque imam. Now, we've talked about time and time again how Rupert Murdoch, who owns, of course, News Corp, and that's Fox News. And Fox News, here in the good old USSA, is rah-rah-rah right-wing reactionary neocon, for the most part. But of course, Sky News, which he also owns, highly critical of Bush-era neocon policies. It's business. It ain't personal, baby. It's just business. And that's how these guys roll. They can play one side for one thing and one side for another thing. They're pulling all the strings because it's all a controlled shell game. And that's why they hype this up. Because again, as we say time and time again, we're all going to be so ready to tear each other apart. And we're going to have to shake out of that. And that's what this psychic war is about. We then had Ralph's wife injecting even more religious fervor in the Ground Zero debate. With more rhetoric and name-calling and just ratcheting everything up. Then we have religious leaders. Have you heard about International Burn a Quran Day? Fortunately, a lot of religious leaders speaking out against that day, as well as the fire departments. An interesting story from crooksandliars.com. And again, we like to track these memes as we see them play out. I don't buy into the unified field conspiracy theory that there's one person at the top controlling everything. We think of them as gangsters or multi-generational serial killers. That's more how they roll. And of course, it's hard for folks to wrap their brain around this because they don't operate this way. So how could they think that other folks would? Florida mosque bombed, FBI calls for help, national media mute. These clusterings, copycat effect, this mass hysteria, mass psychosis, this moral panic, this Islamanoia is ratcheting up, and it's the echo chamber of this corporate-controlled media, which we just proved to you is funding and controlling both sides of the debate, setting us up to go at each other's throats, which we're already doing. You can go watch video of a black construction worker chased away from Ground Zero by a crazed mob. He was a construction worker who was black, who happened to vaguely look Muslim to this frothing crowd. He maybe had a funny hat on. And then it gets even worse. Taxi driver stabbed after passenger asks and finds out that, yes, the taxi driver was a Muslim. More on that from CNN. But going back all the way to last Saturday, freshman Congressman Alan Grayson has done great work. And here he is again pointing out and slamming this Ground Zero mosque distraction for what it is and wondering why we're not talking about the administration that let it happen on purpose.
But if we are going to talk about 9/11, why don't we talk about how not so much the people who died on 9/11 were disgraced by the possibility of an Islamic athletic center several blocks away. How about the fact they were disgraced by a president who let it happen? who went on vacation for the entire month of August after he was warned in writing that Osama bin Laden was actually finding targets in New York City and learning about how to take these planes and do terrible things with them. The thing itself said hijacking, and they did nothing about it. So you tell me, why does President Obama have to be drawn into this at this point when the Republicans let us down this way so terribly and got us into two wars to boot?
I had a feeling you might say something interesting. Okay, and by the way, that memo also said they plan to attack New York and possibly Washington. So, and if you remember, the guy who delivered that memo to him, the CIA guy, he said, all right, now you covered your ass, you can go home. Okay, that's what President Bush did when he got that memo about their possibility of attacking.
And then promptly spent the entire month of August on vacation. So who really let down those people on 9/11? Was it Barack Obama? Was it the people who want to build some kind of health club in downtown New York? Or was it the President of the United States right then, George W. Bush?
Yes, it was, but let's not fall into the left-right paradigm trap, as we're going to find out a little bit later. Yes, of course, the Bush regime is completely convictable on multiple levels of negligence and war crimes. But as we'll see, our current change gang has no interest in investigating that. But as we are approaching the ninth anniversary of the catalyzing catastrophic events of 9/11, the blank check that's led to all the ridiculous things we've seen in the last 9 years, if we did some kind of amazing rundown of the egregious things that have happened in the last 9 years, it would probably blow all our minds and bring us all to tears. Now, as we're approaching the ninth anniversary, I should also throw in a mention that it's pretty much the fifth anniversary of Katrina as we speak. But we're finishing off our 9/11 updates on this news purge. Disquietreservations.blogspot.com gets into missing the truth, how the New York Times covered a 9/11 truth gathering. Crazy conspiracy theorists. This could be that cognitive infiltration that Cass Sunstein, Obama's info czar, recommends and writes about. Our last 9/11 note. Hopefully, NYCCan.org is going to be able to get this commercial on television, on billboards, all around New York, coming very soon, and it's all a part of the campaign for building what?
I lost my son.
My nephew.
My uncle.
My son.
On September 11th, 2001.
Most people don't know that a third tower fell on September 11th.
World Trade Center 7, a 47-story skyscraper, was not hit by a plane.
Although the official explanation is that fire brought down Building 7.
Over 1,200 architects and engineers have looked into the evidence
and believe there is more to the story.
Bring justice to my son.
My uncle.
My nephew.
My son.
And thousands of others who died on September 11th.
Go to buildingwhat.org.
buildingwhat.org, and there are links there for you to donate to try and get that commercial and those ads going. As we close out our 9/11 updates, I just want to remind you, I don't know what anniversary retrospective I'm going to be able to put together for you. However, my man James Corbett of CorbettReport.com is prepping massive episode 144 for September 5th, his amazing ninth anniversary episode. So I would recommend subscribing. As we go down the news purge, it's time for BioWars Enviro Health updates. And again, we just like to mention, with no great fanfare here, and that's my fault for not covering this perhaps in greater detail, it's difficult sometimes to go into the past when there's so much in the present. But we should note that it's pretty much the five-year anniversary of the catalyzing catastrophic events of Hurricane Katrina. And we're still just only finding out more about those events, as we're still only finding out about the Gulf oil spill. As I've now joked that apparently, oh, well, the Iraq war is over and the Gulf spill is all gone. We can go back to paying attention to reality television. and sports steroids and other bread and circus distractions. But first on our BioWars EnviroHealth updates from Washington's blog, a golf chemist says and claims that mercenaries hired by BP are now applying Corexit, the toxic dispersant, at night and in an uncontrolled manner, and that would be the Corexit which BP says it no longer uses. Bob Naiman, analytical chemist, 30-plus years experience in the field. He has been conducting tons and tons of tests. There are a lot of photos here, but we'll jump down to the pertinent point for you. Naiman further said he saw mercenaries dressed in all black fatigues using GPS coordinates applying Corexit at Dauphine Island at Bayou La Batre, Alabama. The mercenaries were Blackwater-type mercenaries, and Naiman assumed they must have been hired by either BP or the government. Naiman also told WashingtonsBlog.com that Corexit is being sprayed at night and that it is being applied in such a haphazard manner that undiluted 9527 is running onto beach sand. For confirmation and explanation of these claims, link, more from WashingtonsBlog.com, Switchboard.org, and Counterpunch.org. As I said, this is a catastrophe that they're almost quite literally sweeping under the rug, using Corexit to sort of artificially disperse this oil. It's not cleaning it up. And meanwhile, as we watch the media memes, and that's what we do here, we see then films like Piranha 3D come out, and all these films about environmental bio-war catastrophes. And it gets worse and worse and worse. Again, from Washington's blog, portions of the Gulf are so toxic that animals are trying to crawl out of the water. Multiple sources of people saying fish and other aquatic animals are trying to basically leap out of the water. Thousands of dead fish surface at the mouth of the Mississippi River. More on that from Raw Story. But on around the world, plastic pollution in the Atlantic Ocean. More on that from allgov.com. MyFoxNY.com notes, uninsured slow to sign up for coverage. How slow? Just two people in New Jersey will begin receiving coverage under new plans created by federal health care reforms. Two people in Hackensack, New Jersey sign up for Obamacare. U.S. Postal Service test bioterror response. BioPrepWatch.com has been tracking this story again. They're training our postal workers to hand out vaccines, I'm sure, that'll just be good for you. An interesting story from DigitalTrends.com. Artificial plant harvests kinetic energy. And our last BioWar EnviroHealth notes come from Press TV. Brazil witnesses fire tornado. Now, I suppose that story could go right alongside with the Norway spiral and the Haiti quake and the lights. And again, a lot of these bizarre earth changes and events that we're seeing. And again, they're being predictively played out in our favorite film and television. That's why it's important to not only not hate the media, but become the media, but become media literate. A fire tornado. Well, at least God said he wasn't going to destroy the world by water again. On to the drug war. From the CBC, cannabis car to be made in Canada. An electric car made of hemp is being developed by a group of Canadian companies in collaboration with an Alberta Crown Corporation. The Kestrel will be prototyped and tested later in August by Calgary-based Motive Industries Incorporated, a vehicle development firm focused on advanced materials and technologies. The electric cannabis car. Now, don't believe for a second that, we just invented these things. We could have been powering cars with cannabis and ethanol forever. Everybody knows hemp and those fibers are the best. That's why they're here. and making them illegal is, as Bill Hicks would say, a little unnatural. And that ties in again with Standard Oil and all of those things that, again, these elites have foisted us and gotten us hooked on, whether it's bad food or bad terror juice or any of those things, or the web. It's like a drug. They'll give it to you for free, and then they get you hooked, and then they're going to pull the rug out and blame us for doing it because we're so dirty. Meanwhile, the sun is heating up. Caps are melting on other moons and planets. Your SUV isn't doing that. Now, I generally think you're probably a wasteful dumbass if you're driving around too many SUVs and garbage. But again, you got to be the change you want to see in the world. And I digress. Let's get the rest of the drug war updates. 2010 pot legalization push began at HempFest in Seattle. More on that from NewsJunkiePost.com. GQ.com writer works at a marijuana coffee shop and writes about it. My cushy new job. Another interesting one from the News of the Weird of ClickToHouston.com. 13 bears surround police in pot field. Police who uncovered two marijuana fields near the U.S.-Canada border had to tread carefully. 13 black bears were wandering around the crops. Cops come and try and snatch bears' crops. Our last drug war note is unbelievable, and the DEA do like to visit Media Monarchy from time to time, but this story from allgov.com, Ebonics speakers needed to work for Drug Enforcement Administration. Now, in their job posting, they don't, I believe, come out and say Ebonics, but you know what they mean. We need to speak the lingo. Because, that, I mean, that's always been the way. You create language to get around folks you don't want hearing what you're talking about, like you did when you were a kid. On to history mystery. And again, this is, I feel, one of those stories that's been floating around as so many things and as gets made fun of in mass media. The crazy conspiracy theorists that rant and rave about things and live on mountaintops and do crazy radio shows that ultimately pretty much always turn out to be right. Hitler DNA tests show he likely had Jewish and African roots. Adolf Hitler may have been descended from both Jews and Africans, DNA tests are reporting, the Daily Mail says. Journalists Jean-Paul Mulders and historian Mark Vermeeren used DNA to trace 39 of the Nazi leader's relatives earlier this year. The relatives included an Austrian farmer identified only as a cousin named Norbert H. A chromosome called Y-DNA in the relative saliva samples is rare in Germany as well as Western Europe. It's most commonly found in the Berbers of Morocco, in Algeria, Libya, and Tunisia, as well as among Ashkenazi and Sephardic Jews. Mulders told Belgian magazine NAC that, quote, one can from this postulate that Hitler was related to people whom he despised. We've seen a lot of the talk and chatter lately about Oliver Stone's upcoming series, I believe The Secret History of America, which, of course, Daniel Hopsicker already used that title 10 years ago. And he's getting a lot of flack for saying he was going to put Hitler in context, because, of course, you can't say anything about Hitler or Israel or the Holocaust or you're a racist anti-Semite. And that's the way the whole game has been set up, which we're going to further expose a little bit later in this episode. The powers that be fund most sides. And anytime there's a real grassroots uprising, it's infiltrated and misdirected in a COINTELPRO-like fashion. Hitler was loved and adored by the industrialists, and he loved the Western eugenicists, like Margaret Sanger, racist founder of Planned Parenthood. The sinister forces behind all of these things you must explore. From opednews.com, Oswald and his 12 Handlers, Part 1. Mother, Meyer, and the Spotters. Now, perhaps as we approach the JFK assassination anniversary, maybe all the parts of these stories will be out and we'll go through these and flesh this out further. That, again, it sometimes takes a long time and the crazy conspiracy theorists aren't believed, whether that was Mark Lane or Jim Garrison, but it comes out later. And unfortunately, nobody does anything about it. One interesting tabloid note from, where do we get this from? CelebrityGossip.net. Katie Holmes, she of the Tom Cruise Scientology cult, more on that in just a moment, is shooting some TV movie or something with Greg Kinnear, and she's playing Jackie Kennedy, so a bunch of photos leaked of Katie Holmes dressed up as Jackie Kennedy in the iconic pink outfit that she wore on November 22nd, 1963. Again, bizarre connections. Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard, Jack Parsons, Aleister Crowley, Babylon Working, occult. It's all there. So, speaking of Scientology, let's get a couple of holy hex updates. First, from the New York Post, Stanley Kubrick's widow lost daughter to Scientology. Stanley Kubrick might be spinning in his grave. His daughter Vivian, 50, had a falling out with him when he was directing his last movie, Eyes Wide Shut, about cultish secret society-like behavior, and she came to his funeral in 99 with a female minder from the Church of Scientology. How nice. Kubrick's widow, Christiane Kubrick, told The Guardian, quote, "I've had two conversations with her since Stanley died. The last one was 8 years ago. She became a Scientologist and didn't want to talk to us anymore. Vivian never went to see her older sister, Anya. She was dying of cancer or came to her funeral in 2009, Christiane says, adding, "And these were children that had been joined at the hip." At 17, Vivian made the documentary The Making of The Shining. At 24, she composed the score for Full Metal Jacket. "She's a fabulous person," Christiane Kubrick told the paper. "Beautiful, very witty, enormously talented. We had fights, but she was hugely loved. And now, I've lost her." To the cult of Scientology. Our other holy hex note goes to truthout.org. Troops punished after refusing to attend evangelical concert. Hooah! Oh, my good grief. We're making our way down the news purge list. And it's time for murder and mayhem, my friends. It's going to get really ugly, but our first one from Threat Level is quite bizarre and interesting and definitely worth noting. Court says death threats addressed to corporations aren't illegal. An Arizona man who plotted a massacre outside the 2008 Super Bowl had his conviction overturned Monday by a federal appeals court because his snail mail death threats went to no specific targets. The case concerned Kurt William Havelock, who drove to the Super Bowl in Glendale, Arizona with a newly purchased assault rifle and dozens of rounds of ammo with the intent to kill. "It will be swift and bloody," he wrote media outlets in packages mailed a half hour before he got cold feet and abandoned the plan. "I will sacrifice your children upon the altar of your excess." With the prodding of his father, he turned himself in to local police. Federal authorities charged him with 6 counts of mailing threatening letters. The defendant was convicted on all charges and sentenced to a year in prison. During the trial and on appeal, the 40-year-old, who was disgruntled that he was denied a liquor permit to open a bar, argued that he committed no crime at all. The 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals agreed in a 2-1 decision. Under the threatening letter statute, the person to whom the mail is addressed must be an individual person, not an institution or corporation. With a PDF of that decision for you to download, written by Judge William Canby, who was joined by Judge Betty Fletcher. Havelock's communications were mailed to media outlets not named individuals. In dissent, Judge Susan Graber wrote, quote, "The result of the majority's interpretation is that the statute prohibits sending a threatening communication only if the outside of the envelope or package explicitly directs delivery to a natural person." A bizarre and interesting development, to say the very least. Will we see this become a more popular defense? In a way, will we see this become perhaps a useful tool in the information war? I'm not advising that at all. But I posted up the photo to go along with this for the fantastic documentary, The Corporation, which if you haven't seen, you must. If for nothing else than to watch the guy talk about on 9/11, wow, gold must be going through the roof. But of course, corporations are people. That's the interesting part about this decision. We know that corporations are people. Skull and Bones Supreme Court decision ensured that nearly 100 years ago, if not more, off the top of my head. As always, research everything I say on the show. Don't take me for gospel. It's all laid out on MediaMonarchy.com. We'll have to get more into that. Now, an interesting story that, again, we're under our murder and mayhem heading. This report comes from CBS11TV.com, and this is coming out of McKinney, Texas. Police identify suspect in suspicious Texas shooting. Now, I got a news tip, and again, thanks to the folks that send me news tips. It's much appreciated. MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. The YouTube channel, youtube.com/CullHavoc, CullHavoc, goes into some of the oddities surrounding this story. That, again, as we watch the murder and mayhem and the sort of mass murder contagion gene, we like to see if some of these stories have the stinky smell and the fingerprints of the intelligence agencies. So let's get this report from CBS 11 TV on Patrick Gray Sharp.
This cell phone video taken by an eyewitness as a fire was burning and a gunman was shooting at McKinney Police Headquarters earlier today. And we are learning some new information about the gunman in today's shooting. Thanks for joining us tonight. I'm Doug Dunbar.
And I'm Karen Borda. The gunman's been identified as 29-year-old Patrick Gray Sharp of Anna. Sharp died by gunfire, but it's still not clear whether it was by his own hand or police fire. It's just one of the things investigators are looking into tonight.
Here's the latest as we know it at 10 o'clock. Police say around 9 o'clock this morning, Gray pulled up at police headquarters in a pickup truck with a trailer. In that trailer was fertilizer. He had then set the truck on fire and began shooting. Police estimate he fired off some 100 rounds this morning. Police spotted Gray in the trees about 200 yards from the building. Then they began returning fire. During their investigation, police discovered a cache of weapons and ammunition. We have live team coverage of the McKinney shooting tonight.
Jay Gormley's live in Anna at the gunman's house, where he spoke exclusively with Sharp's former employer, and Bud Gillette with more on just what unfolded today and one person who watched it unfold before his eyes. Jay, we're going to start with you.
Okay, Karen. Well, police and SWAT officers surrounded the house before noon. Once they realized that no one was inside, that's when crime scene investigators took over, and our cameras were the only cameras rolling when they removed even more weapons.
Police brought out at least a half dozen rifles from the home of 29-year-old Patrick Sharp. Earlier in the day, the bomb squad searched for explosives inside his house in Anna. Neighbors spent the better part of the day watching the search unfold. Many in this quiet neighborhood say Sharp kept to himself, but occasionally fired off shots in the air in his backyard.
Christmas, I know he was shooting on Christmas, so that's about it. I mean, he doesn't normally, you know, be shooting, you know, just on Christmas, 4th of July.
Patrick Sharp shared the house with a roommate. Bobby Cox is the stepfather of that roommate. Cox, who doesn't want his face shown on TV, had high praise for the 29-year-old Sharp.
He was an angel. He was just a great guy. He was like a son to us, yeah.
Cox thought so highly of Sharp that he hired him as a part-time landscaper. Cox owns Powell Tree Farm in Anna and says Sharp always got compliments from customers.
I'd say he's probably one of the nicer men I've ever known, young men I've ever known. I can't remember him ever saying anything that would leave any indication that he would harm anybody.
Sharp's part-time job as a landscaper may very well explain where he got the ammonium nitrate that was attached to the back of his pickup truck. It's the same type of fertilizer used by Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing.
We talk about Sharp's roommate. He is also the stepson of Bobby Coxwell. He is out of town. But however, the AP reached Eric McClellan. They talked to Mr. McClellan, and he was shocked to hear about his roommate. But he did say this: yes, we had guns inside. It is Texas. We do have the right to bear arms.
For now, we do. So again, YouTube.com/CallHavoc sent me another video that I have linked up related to this Patrick Gray Sharp shooter story. Again, homegrown errorism only being amped up more and more and more. There's a lot of links in here. Man allegedly fires more than 100 rounds at police headquarters after burning truck to lure people out. The trailer was allegedly packed with wood chips, roadside flares, gasoline, and ammonium nitrate. Video linked up shows the front of the truck burning, not the trailer. Why would he set the front of the truck on fire and not the trailer? The trailer appears to be filled with dirt, which doesn't burn so well. There's a screenshot of the dirt-filled trailer. Police and media focus on Sharp's work as a security guard. And again, getting into his friends, noting that he was a marksman, that he wouldn't have missed. Is this story suspicious? I don't know. Again, we lay out the information and hope that you guys will do more research and, again, report back to us here. On down the murder and mayhem, 43 killed in a Chinese plane crash. More on that from the Associated Press. The disturbing story from CNN, three Colombian teens that were on a Facebook hit list killed in the last 10 days. Social networking, copycat effect, hit lists, it grows and grows and grows. Our last murder and mayhem note is a disturbing one coming from CBSNews.com. Craigslist killer wrote his ex-fiancée's name in blood before allegedly, apparently, killing himself in prison.
Stopping our news at 4:33, a message written in blood in the jail cell of accused Craigslist killer Philip Markoff.
The Boston Globe is reporting that Markoff wrote out his ex-fiancée's name before apparently committing suicide. And this new detail comes as Boston's sheriff responds to accusations that officers at the jail could have done more to prevent Philip Markoff's suicide. Our Jennifer Egan is live right now at the Nashua Street Jail with more. Good morning, Jennifer.
Mike Aaron, good morning. There are still a lot of questions surrounding this case. Boston City Councilor Stephen Murphy is calling for an independent investigation. He says he wants to know how Markoff was able to get a hold of the item he used to apparently kill himself here. Now, it's been reported that Markoff used a pen to stab himself, also a plastic bag to take his own life. The DA's office says an autopsy has been conducted, but they're waiting for more specialized testing before they release a cause here. The other question, the length of time between when Markoff was checked on last and when he was found unresponsive in his cell. The sheriff says that inmates are supposed to be checked on every 30 minutes. Boston City Councilor Stephen Murphy is questioning whether or not the accused Craigslist killer was left alone much longer than that.
That closes out our murder and mayhem updates on this massive 826 news purge. Do you know the score? As we now get to our latest Obamasiah updates, the Prince of Peace Prize, the man with the shady background and different names and connected to a CIA front called the Business International Corporation, BIC. But here we go from our own KPTV, Fox 12, from right here in Oregon. Oregon jets scramble after Air Force One space violation. Calls about sonic booms cripple the 911 system in Washington. I heard about this from my man Alex Ansari of Outside the Box, and I had no idea the Obamasiah was even in our neighborhood. Now, of course, he wasn't visiting Portland. He knows full well that he pretty much has these folks in his back pocket. Of course, home of one of the most massive rallies during the campaign in 2008 was here in Portland, Oregon, 75,000+ people. But two fighter jets from Portland scrambled to Seattle after a float plane violated airspace restrictions around Air Force One during a visit by Obama. The 142nd Fighter Wing Public Affairs Office said the F-15 fighter jets left Portland International Airport at about 1:38 p.m. Tuesday. I was just getting on a bus to go to work, but a lot of times I can hear the massive jet sounds. Now, the airport is nearby, but you can tell the difference between a commercial jet and a military jet. The jets were cleared for supersonic speed and produced two sonic booms that could be heard from Longview to Seattle. Our aircraft are on alert 24/7 in the Portland area, and we scramble up in response to that. Of course, it seems like when it really matters, the scrambling doesn't happen. Stand down orders seem to happen. Unless you've heard anything to the contrary. But that is our first of, I believe, three instances of airspace violation. As again, as we noted last week, so many powder kegs looking for a spark. We note from allgov.com that other governments are investigating Bush torture. Why is the Obama change administration silent? With the executive and judicial branches of government have been reluctant to do in the U.S., their counterparts in other countries are confronting head-on. Judges in the U.K., Spain, Australia, Poland, and Lithuania are preparing to hear allegations that their governments helped the CIA run secret prisons in their countries or cooperated in illegal U.S. treatment of terrorism suspects. Another case sits before the European Court of Human Rights in France, where El Masri of Germany, whose case was dismissed by the Supreme Court in the United States, is suing the government of Macedonia for handing him over to CIA agents who allegedly tortured him in Afghanistan. In Spain, prosecutors are pursuing criminal charges against six senior Bush administration officials who approved the use of torture on detainees held in Afghanistan, Iraq, Guantanamo Bay, and other black sites worldwide. As we noted last week, when the stink becomes too much, those that give the orders burn the underlings. Gangsters bump each other off when the heat comes on. Our last amazing Obamasiah note is a positive one. It was a remarkable moment in the annals of corporate media television. During a Fox News segment on the staggering unemployment rate among the young, a former Obaminoid manages to sneak in the truth. There is no difference between Clinton, Bush, Obama. They're all puppets for the elite banksters.
You both voted for Barack Obama. What kind of hope and change with regard to the job market, Tatiana, did you expect?
I expected way more change, but now doing the research, I realized that Obama is an illusion of change. He's a lot like Bush in many ways, and he's a lot like Bush in many ways.
And what way?
It's a fallacy to actually believe that he cares about unemployment when he hired an economic team that's comprised of Volcker, Geithner, and it just shows you that these men were in the past three administrations, and they don't really care for the poor and the working class of this nation. But I'm not really I'm not so much disappointed in Obama. I'm also disappointed with the Republicans and the American citizens. Uh-huh. Far too many Americans keep falling for this left-right paradigm when the power structure at the top of both parties is corrupt. They're both sold to the bankers and the corporate interests.
Blam. There you go. Busting out truth talking points there on Faux News. Obviously, someone who has now done their research after being tricked by yet another phony progressive puppet. Obama's administration, of course, is packed like a sardine can with globalists from the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, and the Bilderberg Group. Following Obama's election win, he named 14 top cabinet selections, and 9 of them were affiliated with the Bilderberg Group, 10 were affiliated with the Council on Foreign Relations, and 5 hailed from the Trilateral Commission. Geithner, in addition to working for the Federal Reserve, is associated with the CFR, Trilateral, and the Bilderbergers. Ditto the former Fed boss, Paul Volcker. We've got one that can see. Our last two notes on this massive news purge are of the Oregon Oddity variety. First, from KGW.com, human remains found on Mount Hood. I believe the updates now, they are believed to be a couple that was lost on Mount Hood last December, as unfortunately we seem to have a high amount of people who go get lost on these mountains, and I don't know if they don't know what they're doing or get in over their heads or what. The last note from StatesmanJournal.com covering Oregon's mid-Willamette Valley with an article written by Henry Miller, health advisory issued for popular lake near Portland. A bloom of toxin-producing blue-green algae has triggered a health advisory to avoid water contact at Blue Lake. The popular recreation lake is in a regional park 20 miles east of Portland on Northeast Marine Drive. The advisory was issued jointly by officials with Oregon Public Health and the Multnomah County Health Department. That's the county that I live in. A bloom of toxin-producing blue-green algae. That, unfortunately, reminds me of a film I watched yesterday, as I am right smack dab in the middle of a rather extended bachelor time, as I'm alone and watching lots of sci-fi. And, you know, I'm a pop culture media junkie, but I watched the 1978 version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, that one directed by Philip Kaufman, who would go on to direct The Right Stuff. In each film on the Jack Finney body snatchers story that have been made based on that original story that was serialized in Collier's Magazine, the 1956 version, the Don Siegel version, the best one, stars Kevin McCarthy. The pods there, I believe, are from an unknown origin. Or I can't recall it off the top of my head, but in this 1978 version with Donald Sutherland, it's basically space matter that flees its dying planet and finds its way onto Earth, and as organic matter in these little blobs through the credit opening sequence, land on trees and drip and ooze and slowly and then quickly start to grow. So it was basically space plants, and that's what this Oregon algae toxin bloom story reminds me of. My friends, before we continue, this seems to be the perfect time to take a quick break. We still have massive geopolitical war whore grand chessboard updates, all the latest on the Econo crash, the controlled demolition, and the setting up of the new financial world order. But we're going to get into police state updates, and it's getting quite Orwellian. There was a moment in the pre-production for this show where I thought I would maybe just do an entire episode about these disturbing police state updates. But they are very Orwellian, and we may wake up and find that we are living in Oceania. But let's take a quick break and listen to a track that opens with a sample from the film version of 1984. It's the Manic Street Preachers with Faster.
I hate purity. I hate goodness. I don't want virtue to exist anyway. I want everyone corrupt.
I am purity. They call me poverty.
Faster from Manic Street Preachers, from their 94 album called The Holy Bible, which, interestingly enough, their lead singer, Richie Edwards, would disappear and was never seen again. That's now been over 15 plus years. That story, of course, was kind of overshadowed here in the States because it surrounded, I believe, came around the time of the death of Kurt Cobain. Ladies and gentlemen, we're now into hour number two of episode 184 from Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, broadcasting live to you, as always, from the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, and again, huge thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FROlympia.org, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, OneSkyRadio.com, and radio23.org, making the high-quality downloads available for you. Subscribe to feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy HD, and you'll get the high-quality episodes suitable for rebroadcast on your own alternative media outlet. So it's time for massive and massively disturbing police state updates. Wake and find, we're living in Oceania. And of course, our Manic Street Preacher song there opened with a sample from the film version of 1984, the one starring John Hurt with the Eurythmics soundtrack. We're going to start, amazingly enough, with an article from Time Magazine, written by Adam Cohen, and it's posted on Yahoo. So this is no small bit of indie news. This is coming right from mainstream media's mouth. The government's new right to track your every move with GPS. Government agents can sneak onto your property in the middle of the night, put a GPS device on the bottom of your car, and keep track of everywhere you go. This doesn't violate your Fourth Amendment rights because you don't have any reasonable expectation of privacy in your own driveway, and no reasonable expectation that the government isn't tracking your movements. That's the bizarre and scary rule that now applies in California and eight other western states, unfortunately, including Oregon, as we shall see in just a moment. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, I believe we just mentioned them, which covers this vast jurisdiction, recently decided the government can monitor you this way virtually any time at once with no need for a search warrant. It's a dangerous decision, one that, as the dissenting judges warned, could turn America into the sort of totalitarian state imagined by George Orwell. It's particularly offensive because the judges added insult to injury with some shocking class bias. The little personal privacy that still exists, the court suggested, should belong mainly to the rich. This case began in 2007 when the Drug Enforcement Administration agents decided to monitor Juan Pineda Moreno, an Oregon resident who they suspected was growing marijuana. They snuck onto his property in the middle of the night and found his Jeep in the driveway a few feet from his trailer home. Then they attached a GPS global positioning system tracking device to the vehicle's underside. After Pineda Moreno challenged the DEA's actions, a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit ruled in January that it was all perfectly legal. More disturbingly, a larger group of judges on the circuit who were subsequently asked to reconsider the ruling decided this month to let it stand. Pineda Moreno has pleaded guilty conditionally to conspiracy to manufacture marijuana and manufacturing marijuana while appealing the denial of his motion to suppress evidence obtained with the help of GPS. Of course, some of these go back to being Ronald Reagan appointees. But if we jump down to the last couple paragraphs, in these highly partisan times, in this fake left-right paradigm, again, the faces change and sometimes the R changes to a D, but the agenda rolls forward, GPS monitoring is a subject that has both conservatives and liberals worried. The U.S. Court of Appeals for D.C. Circuit pro-privacy ruling was unanimous, decided by judges appointed by Reagan, Bush 2, and Clinton. Plenty of liberals have objected to this kind of spying, but it is the conservative Chief Judge Kaczynski who's done so most passionately, saying, quote, 1984 may have come a bit later than predicted, but it's here at last. someday, soon, we may wake up and find we're living in Oceania, invoking Orwell's totalitarian dystopia where privacy is non-existent. Is that what we're heading for? The boot on the face of humanity forever? We've kind of openly speculated here that the two main handbooks of predictive programming, 1984 and Brave New World, sort of offered to us by the elites. Would you like Brave New World or would you like 1984? You're going to get one. And it gets even worse and worse and worse. An article from Andy Greenberg on Forbes.com. Again, grabbing this from mainstream, mainline outlets, corporate media. Full-body scan technology deployed in street-roving vans. As the privacy controversy around full-body security scans begins to simmer, it's worth noting that courthouses and airport security checkpoints aren't the only place where backscatter X-ray vision is being deployed. The same technology, capable of seeing through clothes and walls, has also been rolling out on U.S. streets. American Science and Engineering, a company based in Billerica, Massachusetts, has sold U.S. and foreign government agencies more than 500 backscatter X-ray machines mounted in vans that can be driven past neighboring vehicles to see their contents. Joe Rice, vice president of marketing at the company, told Forbes in an interview. While the biggest buyer of AS&E's machines over the last 7 years has been the DOD, operations in Afghan, Iraq, Reese says law enforcement agencies have also deployed the vans to search for vehicle-based bombs in the U.S. This product is now the largest selling cargo and vehicle inspection system ever. Let's get a clip of the vans in action.
The Z Backscatter Van from American Science and Engineering. From the outside, the ZBV looks like an ordinary delivery van, allowing it to blend in to urban and other landscapes. Yet, as it passes by cars, trucks, containers, and other objects, its unparalleled X-ray screening system provides photo-like images, detecting explosives, weapons, contraband, and stowaways. These images can be immediately analyzed by the operator seated in the ZBV's cab. The ZBV is the perfect screening tool for seaports, military bases, border crossings, checkpoints, and any other locations where illegal material or IEDs can be smuggled in via cars, trucks, or other vehicles. Using AS&E's unique backscatter technology, the ZBV produces electronically generated X-rays that detect substances containing low atomic number elements, such as carbon, hydrogen, and nitrogen. These elements are often present in explosives and other contraband. The ZBV is an ideal tool for detecting these threats in vans, buses, cars, trucks, cargo containers, dumpsters, densely foliated trees and shrubs, and any other objects or containers where dangerous items can be concealed. The ZBV is not only incredibly effective, but also very easy to use. It can be operated by either one or two people and is up and running within minutes. The operators can view the objects as they're being scanned, and by using AS&E's image analysis tools, they can manipulate, enhance, and save these images. The bottom line is that within minutes, your operator will know whether potentially dangerous materials are present. The ZBV provides still another important tool, radioactive threat detection. This feature can find both dirty bombs and nuclear devices. The ZBV is not only effective and mobile, but also safe. The radiation levels are very low, equivalent to the exposure passengers would receive if they flew in an airplane for 15 minutes. In summary, the ZBV is clearly the most effective screening vehicle on the market today. It's smaller, lighter, and safer than anything else available today, yet costs much less than other mobile X-ray screening systems. The ZBV, a solution for today's security officials.
Backscatter X-ray vans. That's right, they're not only destroying your privacy and taking naked photos and storing them, as now has been exposed, and destroying your DNA in airports, they're doing it now on city streets. So as we see law enforcement agencies, and they're already admitting it, they're buying it all over the place. All we need is some sort of catalyzing, catastrophic false flag event to then force these through. and then we'll know they've already bought them. They already wanted them. They just needed to scare the shit out of people to accept more egregious loss of personal liberties. NetworkWorld.com is reporting from the ACLU. Spying on free speech nearly at Cold War levels. ACLU released numerous reports of increased government spying on American citizens. Once upon a happy time, an unhappy time rather, U.S. law enforcement agencies from the FBI to local police had a history of political spying during the Cold War. We've discussed that recently with COINTELPRO, the infiltration and destruction of groups that are grassroots and may actually pose a threat to the system. The ACLU said that the old political spying tendencies are running high again. Individuals and groups are being monitored and harassed for little more than peacefully exercising their First Amendment rights. One ACLU report, Policing Free Speech, Police Surveillance and Obstruction of First Amendment Protected Activity, reveals that in recent years, Americans have been put under surveillance or harassed by law enforcement agencies in 33 states plus the District of Criminals. What horrific acts did these Americans commit? Organizing, marching, protesting, supporting unusual viewpoints, and engaging in normal, innocuous behavior such as writing notes or taking photographs in public. There is a map that shows states where incidents of political spying were found in these reviews. And fortunately, my home state of West Virginia stands out as one of the few states on the whole eastern seaboard there that doesn't have a case. However, of course, unfortunately, in my current state of Oregon, it's quite red, and I believe we've discussed, too, how we essentially live here in a constitution-free zone that borders the continental United States, soon to be morphed into the North American Union. Folks could think, oh, it'll never happen. That's what they said about the European Union. And then we'll also have the African Union. And just like we said, we're going to wake up and find we're living in Oceania. Furthermore, and again, this couldn't be more appropriate, police state updates. Republican candidate for governor Carl Paladino said he would transform some New York prisons into dormitories for welfare recipients, where they could work in state-sponsored jobs, get employment training, and take lessons in personal hygiene. Paladino, a wealthy Buffalo real estate developer popular with many Tea Party activists, isn't saying the state should jail poor people. The program would be voluntary. But the suggestion that poor families would be better off in remote institutions rather than among friends and family in their own neighborhoods struck some anti-poverty activists as insulting. Paladino is competing for the Republican nomination with former U.S. Representative Rick Lazio, and that primary is September 14th. We have lots of primaries, lots of elections coming up, and again, as we've been reporting for months and months and months here, what started out as the pro-liberty movement surrounding Ron Paul and Campaign for Liberty morphed into the Tea Party, which for a brief moment posed a threat to Congress, and what is going on is business as usual in the District of Criminals. It's, of course, completely been corrupted and infiltrated and misdirected and destroyed. When you see fools like Sarah Palin aligning themselves with the Tea Party, you know that it's done. And again, you'll note that while they're waving the banner of the Tea Party, they're still running as Republicans. They're still being elected as Republicans. They're still in the same false paradigm. But again, these are the paradigms that keep us lunging at each other's throats. But from prisons to schools, what's the difference anymore? From NBCConnecticut.com, New Canaan, which that's quite appropriate, New Canaan, Connecticut considers tracking devices for students. In the Tony town of New Canaan, students might someday get tracking tags. Students might someday get tracking tags along with their textbooks. No decisions have been made, but school officials plan to look into the possibility of adding radio frequency tags to student or staff ID cards, or place them on school property like laptops, the New Canaan Advertiser reports. Laptops should remind you of the Pennsylvania case of spying on students and taking tens of thousands of photos of them while they're undressed. But no charges for that case. Carver's Bay, South Carolina, enlists the ninth grade. Freshmen all put in junior ROTC. That is from thesunnews.com. And we also from timesleader.com. This coming from, oh yes, we're right back to Pennsylvania. Students prepare for Homeland Security careers. The Center for Adult and Continuing Education at Misericordia University is introducing a new Bachelor of Arts degree program this fall. The Government, Law, and National Security program will be available for the fall semester of this year for adult learners with an associate's degree in the area of criminal justice, business, and human services. This will prepare them to enter the expanding national and homeland security workforce within the government and private sector. As we've said, and yes, it sounds like a joke, but we've said it time and time again, and we only see it coming more and more. As they complete this controlled demolition of an economy that was already fake, that was already built on zeros and ones, that had already been overtaken by the banksters and the gangsters in the earlier part of the 20th century with the Federal Reserve, as we see more jobs destroyed, more homes foreclosed, more businesses outsourced, more small businesses attacked, free speech being attacked, more green shirts, nanny police, training kids, indoctrinating them, as we've seen. I don't even want to say it again. It's like a sci-fi movie. In the dystopic future where there are no jobs and everybody's packed into compact cities, totally controlled in the track and trace panopticon control grid, the only jobs you'll be able to get will be working for the state, like some corrupt agent, like some Charlton Heston thug out of Soylent Green. That's why we make so many media references. Again, you've seen all these things, you've heard all these things, and especially when we're talking about Huxley, or talking about H.G. Wells, you're talking about well-connected elite families. And we've noted that perhaps in the case of someone like Orwell, he was warning about what could happen. But in the case of folks like Huxley and Wells, they're telling you what's going to come. H.G. Wells, you know, Time Machine, War of the Worlds, but he also wrote The Open Conspiracy and the New World Order, and said that many people will die trying to fight against the New World Order, but they'll lose. But he's wrong. If we can make one more media reference here, and this is our hope, and this is what this mass awakening could be. And it's happening all around us. That we could incite a revelation. That we could avoid what is coming. And that the more they tighten their grip, the more we'll slip through their fingers. As we continue through the disturbing police state updates, waking up and finding we're living in Oceania, let's get another one from Kurt Nimmo. And we've been in Connecticut and South Carolina and Pennsylvania with all of the police state activities coming in the schools. And we've covered in the past all the massive instances of terror drills being run in schools. It almost seems as though those aren't being run as much. That the indoctrination and the desensitization for both the military and for the civilians has become kind of complete. And now it's stepped up to the next level. Pentagon teaches kindergarten kids as U.S. schools are militarized. This, of course, represents the process of what is known as, what they call it themselves, full-spectrum dominance. but in this case over children's minds. First, the government paid the mothers not to have husbands in the home, single-parent benefits, and now soldiers are bringing up our kids from kindergarten age. This is about training Americans almost from birth that it's normal to have military troops involved in routine life on a day-to-day basis. This is fascist martial law conditioning. In 1787, Thomas Jefferson lamented the fact that the newly minted Constitution lacked any specific provisions on standing armies, saying, quote, "I do not like the omission of a Bill of Rights providing clearly and without the aid of sophisms for protection against standing armies. The spirit of this country is totally adverse to a large military force." Now, we relish large armies and enthusiastically send them out to kill people and break things around the world. The government and the corporate media encourage us to support our troops as they illegally occupy foreign lands and engage in war crimes. George Washington's admonition, expressed in his farewell address, that the U.S. extend commercial relations and have with foreign nations as little political connection, to say nothing of military, as possible, is almost entirely forgotten. In violation of posse comitatus, a law in the spirit of Jefferson's warning about the militarization of civil society, the Pentagon works hand-in-hand with local law enforcement. Increasingly, militarized police are becoming an extension of the Defense Department, Homeland Security, and even the CIA and FBI. Few seem to understand the grave danger of this tendency. And now, as we have already shown, and we will further show, the military has invaded our grade schools. A new partnership between the Anchorage School District and the U.S. Army Alaska will add a military presence to local schools. This reporting from Alaska Star. School and military officials said the program will help students academically, but having uniformed military in schools will also lend support to children of military members on deployment, they said, and give non-military kids an understanding of what soldiers do for the country. If schools in Alaska want to help students academically, they'd bring in scholars and education experts, not soldiers. Ideally, students should be homeschooled and completely divorced from the pernicious influence of the military and the federal government. And we'll just throw out a quick reference to the School Sucks podcast. And, of course, all the great work being done on peacerevolution.org about the intellectual elite versus us. And how schools don't teach you how to learn. They keep you coming back for more. They don't teach you how to fish, they just give you some fish. But on down the list, from My Fox, New York, an Australian teacher assigns students, gives them an assignment to plan a terror attack. Now, of course, as soon as I tell you that, you know that that was rescinded the moment the higher-ups found out about it. But again, there you go. Terrorists are everywhere. Homegrown extremists are everywhere. The X-ray vans that are now driving around looking for IEDs and explosives and biological weapons in the States. Are they finding any of that? Of course not. And when they do, it seems connected to groups that have been infiltrated by intelligence networks and were paid and provocateurs into saying and or doing stupid things. Aspirational, not operational, if you will. But we've got from the Telegraph and from the Daily Mail, facial recognition software to go public. Computer software which can identify unnamed faces and then collate photographs of that person is to be released to the public amid concern among privacy campaigners. The managers of Face.com, which created the software, told the Sunday Times that 5,000 developers were already using it. The program works by scanning the relative position of the eyes, nose, and mouth and claims to be accurate in 9 out of 10 cases. It then can search the net and match those photos. Face.com, allowing people the ability to identify people from photographs on the internet, now being handed out to us, that of course these biometrics have already been used by the powers that be. They test them out at Disney World and SeaWorld and cool nightclubs, and again, they're pitching it to the kids. San Francisco Guardian reporting on a fingerprint check-in being tried at the 24-hour fitness. Again, that's being reported out of San Francisco. 24 Hour Fitness is a chain. They've got them here in Portland. Let's see if they roll out the fingerprint checking. A great article about a guy and posted it to InfoWars who went to one of the Rock the Bells concerts, hip-hop show. And he wrote a piece called Microchipping the Hip-Hop Community at a show that had KRS-One and Immortal Technique. They had RFID cards that you would trade your money in for. You couldn't use money within the shows. You had to use these RFID smart cards. Microchipping the Hip-Hop Community, getting people used to the idea. We have the U.S. scanning Afghan inmates for biometric database. More on that from Danger Room. An amazing story by way of Examiner.com. An explosive court case, this covered by Deborah Dupree. Secretly forced brain implants. It's a two-part series about the forced implantation of James Walbert, a Wichita, Kansas resident and inventor. This is far too long of a story to go into, but there seems to be proof, or at least it's been put on the record in a court, that this guy is what's referred to as a targeted individual. And it only gets worse. And again, we constantly reference the sci-fi and the predictive programming, and that's why we cover these kind of things. Pre-crime technology to be used in the District of Criminals. Law enforcement agencies in D.C. have begun to use technology that they say can predict when crimes will be committed and who will commit them before they actually happen. The Minority Report, like pre-crime software developed by Richard Burke, professor at the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks again, Pennsylvania. Previous incarnations of the software already being used in Baltimore and Philly were limited to predictions of murders by and among parolees and offenders on probation. But a new report from ABC News, however, notes that the latest version to be implemented in D.C. can predict other future crimes as well. When a person goes on probation or parole, they are supervised by an officer. The question that officer has to answer is, what level of supervision do you provide? Burke told ABC News, intimating that the program could have a bearing on the length of sentences and/or bail amounts. The technology sifts through a database of thousands of crimes and uses algorithms in different variables, such as geographic location, criminal records, and ages of previous offenders, to come up with predictions of where, when, and how a crime could possibly be committed and by who. The program operates without any direct evidence that crimes will be committed. It simply takes data sets and computes possibilities. We're going to jump down and again remind you the story that we covered several months ago. A couple of weeks ago, Google and NQTEL. NQTEL being the investment arm of the Central Intelligence Agency. They gave startup money to Google. They gave startup money to Facebook. Google and NQTEL have recently injected a sum of up to $10 million each into a company called Recorded Future, which uses analytics to scour Twitter accounts, blogs, and websites for all sorts of info, which is used to assemble actual real-time dossiers on people. The company describes its analytics as the ultimate tool for open-source intelligence and says it can also predict the future. Those detached from any kind of moral reality will say, if you got nothing to hide, then what's the problem with being scanned for pre-crime? If it keeps us all safe from murderers, rapists, and terrorists, I'm all for it. How far towards a literal technological Big Brother police state will we slip before people wake up to that fact? I guess everything we're seeing and talking about right now says pretty damn far. U.S. Homeland Security to expand secure communities nationwide. This coming from the EpochTimes.com, DHS plans to broaden its secure communities program nationwide by 2013, according to a DHS release. Administered by Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the largest investigative agency within Homeland Stupidity, Secure Communities aims to identify and possibly remove illegal immigrants with criminal histories from the U.S. This was started in October 08 and was expanded on August 10th of this year to all 25 counties that line the southwest border of the U.S. Secure Communities. More selectively enforced Band-Aid on a gunshot wound that's being done. And on all these levels and all these things that we talk about, it's essentially, unfortunately, the story is always the same. These things are happening on purpose. They're being let to happen on purpose. They're sometimes being made to happen on purpose. And they're being used to further agendas. The destruction of the economy, the destruction of sovereignty, the destruction of just the heart and spirit of what we all thought and think it means or meant to be an American. As they slowly turn up the heat. Scientists simulate terror attack on Boston subway. We've reported similar stories to this before. They've even done this decades ago. I believe it was called Operation Big City. But we get this story from WHDH-TV. Authorities released a non-toxic, odorless gas at 20 MBTA stations last Friday. The study will show how the gas can spread through the train cars and tunnels of the oldest subway system in the country in a terror attack situation. Homeland Security is trying to figure out how an airborne attack might spread. As well they should, because it always seems that whenever we have some kind of event, some kind of attack, it connects back to the very agencies who would have not only the means, motive, and opportunity, but the track record. They create the germs that somehow get out. They're running the military operations that somehow go live. It's all just a coincidence. It's just the whole accidental, coincidental theory of history. New Logan Airport, speaking of Boston, new Logan Airport searches blasted, TSA tests frisky new policy. Logan Airport security just got more up close and personal as federal screeners launched a more aggressive palms first side down body search technique that has renewed the debate over privacy versus safety. The new procedure, already being questioned by the ACLU, replaces the TSA's former back of the hand pat down. Boston is only one of two cities in which the new touchy-feely frisking is being implemented as a test before a planned national rollout. The other unfortunate city is Las Vegas. Returning to Danger Room, Pain Ray, rejected by the U.S. military, is now ready to blast Los Angeles prisoners. Inmates of the Pitches Detention Center, watch your step. If you get online, you may get blasted with an invisible heat ray. And you gotta love how all these articles kind of write it in a tongue-in-cheek way. Oh, it's all so funny. The jail's energy weapon is a small-scale version of the active denial system, the experimental crowd control device that the U.S. military brought to Afghanistan and then quickly shipped back home after questions mounted about the wisdom of blasting locals with a beam that momentarily puts them in agony. The pain weapon seemed at odds with the military's efforts to appear more humane and measured in the eyes of the Afghan populace. Now, does this article go on to mention? No, of course not. Why would they mention that we've already rolled out active denial pain ray systems during the G20 in Pennsylvania last year? They tested out on foreign lands, as they always talk about, oh, this is just for the terrorists, oh, this is just for them, oh, we're not listening to you. They're tested out on them and wheel it around on us. More on this from thesignal.com, Bring on the Heat, where a writer experiences being blasted with a pain ray. And again, always just putting the human face on it. Oh, if that reporter can, he'll probably go, oh, God damn, that's okay. Whew. But as we wrap up these amazing, unbelievable, crushing police state updates, and we wake and find we're living in Oceania, Germany to roll out ID cards with embedded RFID. More on that from ibtimes.com. China's 13-day traffic jam stretched 62 miles. If being in a car in a traffic jam for 13 days isn't a police state, then I don't know what is. Our final note comes from AmericanFreePress.net with an article from Jeffrey Smith, where tied into, again, this coming race war, class war, border war, left versus right, black versus white, we're all lunging at each other's throats. Mexican police to patrol in Staten Island. Apparently, a series of events which has caused wide notice in a storm of protests, the government of Mexico, through its consulate in New York, in the United Nations, has announced it will begin patrolling the New York City borough of Staten Island to safeguard its nationals there. The actions of Mexico come after a series of incidents the Mexican government terms bias attacks. Now, we're going to get into some of the things, but a few, and actually I shouldn't speak to the severity of some of these crimes because I don't really actually know, and we don't have time to go into it right now. But I'm sure it was a couple attacks and a couple of beatings. Meanwhile, the widespread murder and mayhem and death and destruction that goes on in Mexico, with the scores and hundreds of people being killed by the week, literally. These are the things that are going to bring in a North American Union. Quite unfortunately. Now, my friends, that was two of our four posts. And again, massive amounts of news. These posts are jam-packed. And again, I appreciate the news tips that you send me, MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. Sharing this information, reporting on it, spreading it out, putting it on your social network site, doing any of those things all help. But now it's time for Econo Crash, and we'll start with an article from allgov.com before we just get into the other ugly related Econo Crash updates. Government paid off $62 million in student loans for federal employees, or more specifically, Department of Justice, Department of Defense, Securities Exchange Commission, and State Department employees. Wouldn't it be nice if your employer paid your student loans for you? That's what the federal government has been doing the past 8 years for a select group of government employees. A report from the Office of Personnel Management shows 36 agencies helped out more than 8,500 workers last year, paying $61.8 million in student loan bills. Most of those receiving this assistance were lawyers, criminal investigators, administrative personnel, intelligence analysts, and contract specialists. So, just as we noted before, sometimes those laws of whether it's privacy or benefits, they don't apply to the little people. They apply to the wealthy, to those who will keep their place in power. From the economiccollapseblog.com, Bancor. B-A-N-C-O-R. That is the name of the global currency that a shocking new IMF report is proposing. The paper is called Reserve Accumulation and International Monetary Stability. However, this is straight up Keynesian ridiculousness. It will do nothing but bring on more SDRs and credit default swaps, and again, more control by fewer people, as they've bought up and secured all the real resources and assets and give us the paper, the facsimiles, the simulacra, the copy of a copy of a copy that doesn't really mean anything. These are the plans being put forward. And again, they write it all down. They talk about it. But like Alan Dulles said, referring to the Warren Report and the JFK assassination, Americans don't read. MikeChambersLive.com goes into the Enron accounting that has bankrupted the U.S. Our deficit is really much, much higher than what the mainstream reports say. We're really probably at somewhere like $202 trillion. Home sales dropped 27% in July and only getting worse, again from the economiccollapseblog.com, but from the Washington Post, straight mainline. New home sales hit 40-year low. We even have Tony Robbins warning economic collapse is coming. Yes, that Tony Robbins, the motivational speaker. He put out a series of videos saying what you might need to do to prepare for some of the things that might be coming. Krugman, one of the mainline economists that a lot of folks look to. But again, if you really want to know what's going on, we generally look to folks like Gerald Celente or Paul Craig Roberts or the upcoming Webster Tarpley. But in Krugman's, one of his most recent opinions from August 20th from the New York Times, what's it called? I got to give you the headline. Appeasing the Bond Gods. However, in the first paragraph of this article, he notes that the banksters are, quote, acting like the priests of some ancient cult. Now, why would they act like that? CNBC.com notes the economy is in a depression, not a recession. And again, people wandering around saying, oh, the recovery is right on its way. They're now announcing it to you that it's not on its way. Bernanke notes, and already told you it's not going to be. We've already, again, glanced back at Google News. U.S. stocks rise as Bernanke provides some relief. Sure, downward revision of GDP growth, a strong signal of stalled recovery. Again, euphemistic language that George Carlin skewered so well. The new film from Danny Schechter, Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, is now available on DVD, and I've actually already watched a little bit of it streaming on Netflix. Another great documentary exposing, again, the controlled demolition from more mainline left standpoint. But I'll also throw out a quick mention that if you're not a member or a subscriber of TragedyandHope.com, you should be. Richard Grove, the creator of 9/11 Synchronicity, Eighth Estate, PeaceRevolution.org, 9/11 whistleblower, financial whistleblower. In a lot of the groups, I just discovered the other day that they've got a navigating Netflix group, and where folks all talk about some of the things, some of the hidden gems that are on Netflix, and some of the amazing ways you can really use it as an educational tool. But our last couple econo crash notes: below the posting of the government paying off $62 million in student loans for federal employees, U.S. movie theater tickets get the biggest price hike in history, and somehow folks still line up, and it's all because of the 3D garbage. More on that from ArsTechnica.com. Nearly 50% leave Obama mortgage aid program. That's from the Associated Press. And lastly, with, again, what seems to be our weekly report from Webster Tarpley appearing on Russia Today. And as we've noted, Russia Today does great work. If there's a news story, chances are they did a YouTube video about it. I find it a really valuable resource. However, it is coming from Russia. Are they interested in knocking the great Satan down a couple pegs? Of course they are. And that's the game we're playing, and that's why so much of this all leads towards the West and Russia and China. But as long as they're spreading good truth info, we're going to go to where we can get it. China buys euros as fear of world depression grows.
Well, the warning signs don't stop there. Shifting now from the housing crisis to the future of U.S. debt, China has begun to rid itself of U.S. bonds and is now investing in Japan's yen and the euro. Joining me to understand the international implications this could have on the U.S. and global economy is investigative journalist Webster Tarpley.
Hello.
Hey there, Webster. Now, tell me, what does this mean, or what does this spell for the future of U.S. debt?
Well, China has between $2.5 trillion and $3 trillion of foreign exchange, and generally they've kept about a third of that in dollars, but this amount has been going down and the proportion going down. So what we have now is the U.S. Treasury tells us that in May, the Chinese were holding about 32, 33 billion less of U.S. Treasury paper, Treasury bonds, bills, Treasury securities in general than they had been doing in April. So that's the lowest level of Chinese holdings of U.S. government paper in 1 year. So it means China is diversifying. I wouldn't say dumping, but they're diversifying. We got to also remember in the meantime that the U.S. two-year Treasury note today hit an all-time high price and an all-time low interest rate, meaning that everybody in the world is piling into short-term U.S. Treasury paper because they're so frightened of a depression. And I think that's the, ultimately, that's behind the scenes. We have a world economic depression. The United States economy is in depression, no doubt about it. When you have minus 27% in existing home sales, plus the unemployment data, the foreclosure data you've just been going through, that's a depression. There's no doubt about it.
Well, Linda, what is China taking precautions then to in diversifying its ability to invest in different economies?
What they're doing is interesting. The U.S. hedge fund universe, right? Soros, Einhorn, Paulson, these people, as we know, had a plan to shift the depression into Europe. They were trying to destroy the euro with a speculative attack on Greece, Spain, Portugal, and so forth. And this was done in an orchestrated fashion.
And how did they do that?
By using credit default swaps, by attacking Greek government bonds, using credit default swaps and other things. Now, the Germans began to fight back. They banned naked credit default swaps. But the interesting thing is the role of China. I think you can make a case now that China made a three-pronged decision that they would not let the euro go down. This was for technical reasons. The Chinese were essentially rebalancing this basket that they used to keep their currency stable. And notice it has not gone up compared to the dollar. So they were buying euro for commercial reasons. And also they made a political decision that they wouldn't let the U.S. destroy the euro.
Now I'm going to have to cut that clip short. We're running out of time, and I don't have time to play that whole clip for you. However, it's up on the Econo Crash updates on MediaMonarchy.com. We have to keep moving to get through our final post here in the remaining 11 or so minutes. Going back to last Saturday, and again, the story we've covered for the last week or so, Iran starts a reactor while Israel has hundreds of nuclear bombs. Meanwhile, they say this Iranian reactor use is totally unacceptable. We've, of course, had last Saturday the long-delayed startup of the Russian-built Bushehr nuclear power plant. If you recall last week, this was the thing that John Bolton said, U.S. Real is going to have to strike before they unload this uranium, then it'll be too late. We also give you, because we don't have time to fully go into this story that, again, we went over last week on episode 183, a nice little flashback to you from early 2009. This coming from IsraelNationalNews.com. Obama agrees to understanding on Israeli nukes. This would be, of course, the understanding that Israel can do whatever it wants. Meanwhile, the other states have to cower in terror, or else be branded anti-Semitic terrorists. But now, let's quickly blast down the geopolitical war horror updates. Things are getting disturbing. Staying on the U.S.-Israel-Iran situation for a few headlines from ZeroHedge.com. Israel Knesset member declares, we are preparing for war. ActivistPost.com gets into H.R. 1553, authorizing use of force against Iran, and how, of course, it's based on pure lies and propaganda. BigNewsNetwork.com reports on Israeli soldiers accused of sexually abusing children. But our last note on the third rail of geopolitics, the I word. Zionist lobby paid off U.S. journalists to sell Israeli foreign policy.
Now, files declassified in America have revealed covert Republic relations and lobbying activities of Israel in the U.S. The National Archive made the documents public following a Senate investigation. They suggest Israel has been trying to shape media coverage of issues it regards as important. You can download these files from the website of the Institute for Research on Middle Eastern Policy. And we can now cross to Washington and talk to Grant F. Smith, who is the director of this institute. Thank you for joining us, Mr. Smith. I'd like to begin by asking you, what exactly do these files reveal?
These files are from a sealed Senate investigation, which was the result of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and the U.S. Department of Justice looking into groups that brought $36 million into the U.S. to plant stories in the U.S. media and promote Israeli foreign policy objectives in the United States. They're extremely relevant because they revealed, for example, a vast effort to divert U.S. attention from the Israeli Dimona nuclear weapons facility by saying it was merely a research center. They carefully tracked how that story was playing in the U.S. media. And they also were using outlets such as The Atlantic magazine, funneling $50,000 into that magazine in a major effort to disrupt a U.S. peace proposal, which would have involved bringing some Palestinian refugees and allowing them to return to their homes and properties in Israel. The interesting thing about these... Go ahead.
Now, we're going to have to cut that short as well, my friends, as we're running out of time on this episode 184, because we have a ridiculous amount of geopolitics and Warhorse updates to blast through, and all of these things warrant more investigation. British spy found dead in a duffel bag identified as foreign office worker. That's from The Guardian. And the latest releases from WikiLeaks, the CIA Red Cell special memo, which we reported to you last week, now has folks asking, what if foreigners see the U.S. as an exporter of terrorism? Why, what on earth would give them that idea? CIA confirms Red Cell paper could point to new counter-terror agenda against Americans. And more from the Washington Post. WikiLeaks releases CIA paper on U.S. as exporter of terrorism. MyBroadband.co.za reports on the outcry in Belgium over WikiLeaks' publication of the Marc Dutroux dossier. That last name, D-U-T-R-O-U-X, the famed Belgian serial killer, is a story far too deep to get into. However, I do give you a link for some background from isgp.eu, Beyond the Dutroux Affair, The Reality of Protected Child Abuse and Snuff Networks. This, of course, would connect and remind you of things like the Franklin scandal. In our second case of violated airspace, computer/human error sends a military drone into restricted DC airspace. And we also have, I guess, whatever latest terror bust has happened that NationalTerrorAlert.com is reporting on. Notes that this terror suspect was a Canadian Idol contestant, and there is a link to this guy's audition. Again, asking the question, would devout Muslims who are ready to give their lives for the jihad gonna audition for Canadian Idol? Just like, are they gonna hang out in strip clubs and drink and smoke and womanize? But our third and final note of airspace violations, Canadian fighter jets scramble to intercept Russian bombers.
CBC News has learned that Canadian forces fighter jets intercepted two Russian bombers approaching Canadian airspace tonight. The Russian aircraft didn't actually enter Canadian airspace. The incident is similar to one the government confirmed last month.
Now that's from the CBC, but what probably ties in with that, again from Russia Today, Russia and the Shanghai Cooperation Organization united in anti-terror training.
Stage of anti-terrorism drills got underway in southern Russia, with security forces demonstrating how to handle a potential hostage situation. Security representatives from the Shanghai Cooperation Organization came together to take part in the elaborate joint exercises. The military-style demonstration aims to coordinate both rescuers and victims in the event of a terrorist attack. A similar drill was also staged on the Volga River, where security forces carried out reenactments of terrorist incidents. The anti-terror drive comes as Russia continues its struggle against the rise in extremism.
Terror drills and war games being run worldwide, desensitizing the masses to military takeover. U.S. drone strike destroys house full of children in Pakistan. Can't you feel the peace prize? More on that from antiwar.com. Key Karzai aide in corruption inquiry is linked to the CIA. More on that from Of Goats and Men. But we also have more from Raw Story. Private contractors looting and stealing and working with terrorists, says Afghanistan President Hamid Karzai. We also have another report that CIA routinely pays many, many people within the Karzai administration. We've reported to you how his brother is one of the main opium runners in Afghanistan. And again, that's what it's all about. Gold, oil, and drugs, and the resources. That's why we're in Afghanistan. That's why we're in the graveyard of empires, because we want the opium. We want the drugs. Drugs fund Wall Street. But now the flip side to Mexico stationing police near the Staten Island consulate because of some hate crimes. Let's compare that to some of these headlines from Reuters and from Yahoo and from CNN and from the Associated Press. headless, mutilated bodies hung from Mexico Bridge. Mexico police help murder their own mayor. Mexican military kills U.S. motorist at checkpoint. Mexican drug cartel suspected in massacre of 72 migrants. Something tells me there's not too much a difference between Mexican military, Mexican police, and Mexican drug cartel. An interesting story from the Associated Press. Interesting in that, not sure why they decided to pop it up right now, but it's always important to remember that when a shoe flies, a leader ducks, and a trend is born. Victor Boot, the Merchant of Death, will face American justice. More on his extradition from Danger Room. Interestingly enough, this morning from the Washington Post, administration halts prosecution of alleged USS Cole bomber. Oh, that's right, because usually after most of these catalyzing catastrophic events, they don't usually have much evidence to try people. Blackwater, or Z, pays $42 million to continue contracting with the U.S. government. It is U.S. government policy to continue to do business with private military contractors who traffic in children and drugs and more. Here's an actual headline from The Guardian. First U.S. soldier killed in Iraq since withdrawal of combat troops. Yes, the war is over. However, renamed combat brigades carry on in Iraq. More on that from allgov.com and from InfoWars. More troops head to Iraq as Obama declares mission accomplished. The UPI is reporting that the U.S. is to spend $100 million on bases in Afghanistan. And finally, the pertinent question from Danger Room, a quick interview done with troops where they wonder, what the fuck are we doing in Afghanistan again, anyway? That's the question we'll leave you with, my friends. And that's the question we should be asking everyone. The names change, the parties change, but the agenda still rolls on, my friends. That's going to do it for this episode 184 of MediaMonarchy.com. Oh, but let's take a quick look at just a couple of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We had Lockheed Martin out of Ackworth, Georgia. They Googled 11th Mad Scientist Conference. And we also had our good friends at Boeing out of Kent, Washington. The private contractors for the military-industrial complex love to visit MediaMonarchy.com, and so should you, my friends, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Your support helps keep this going, my friends, and I appreciate it. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, reminding you to not hate the media, but become the media, and, of course, as always, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Next Week video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes, and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail Media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go up with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.